Welcome to Plymouth Beneath the Surface podcast. Take a deep breath and dive with me into Plymouth waters to meet people such as scientists, students, photographers, divers, and artists that have orientated their lives around the ocean. I'm your host, Louisa Sian, a recent marine biology graduate from the University of Plymouth, and I'm really happy to have you here to listen to some of my conversations with inspiring and passionate people talking about the ocean. So let's get started. Soul of Discretion, spelled S-O-L-E, like the fish.
It's like the fish is a community interest company, which essentially means that it's not a company that can grow and be bought by a foreign or outside interest. So the community that it's owned by are the fishing community. So our aspirations are always to be growing for the benefit of the local community rather than for growing it to become nice and profitable and then somebody dangles billions of pounds in front of us. We go, oh, yep, that's nice. And that's great for that current generation. But then for anybody in future, that's, you know, that was a one-off and probably things would be run differently and not for the benefit of the fishing community. So the community interest company really enshrines that in it. And I suppose because of that, we don't have to make masses of money, but we have to cover our costs, obviously. I deliberately set it up as a business rather than a charity, even though my main focus is really on protection of the environment and the marine environment specifically. But my thinking is I will never persuade people to stop eating fish, and neither do I wish them to stop eating fish. I don't believe veganism is the panacea for a purer planet. But the way we are eating fish currently is really damaging.
So let's start again. Like, what do you do? Do you sell fish? Do you buy fish? Are you a community of fishermen? What exactly, like, for people that have never heard of Soul of Discretion, how can you explain what it is?
Well, essentially, we're a fishmonger. You know, if you're looking for a fishmonger that's not making a bad impact on, or everybody's treading on the planet, right? But we are making as low a footprint as we can, then we're the fishmonger that's essentially looking to do that. So we are a community interest company that's owned by the fishing community that land to it. They are exclusively the small scale boats. So you'll never find a fish on our list from an industrial trawler or from a beam trawler or from dynamite fisheries out in the Pacific or from even dredge scallop fisheries, much more local to home and really very, very damaging. So I think a lot of people in the Southwest go, oh, it's local. Oh, and therefore it must be great. But we need to know that some of the most world's damaging fisheries happen right on our doorstep here in the Southwest. So for me, it was having come out of a restaurant background, which relied, it was a Japanese restaurant that relied therefore very much on fish.
Tuna.
Yeah, absolutely. Bluefin tuna, freshwater eel, all those things that are really critically endangered now. It really felt important to be able to say to people, well, no, you shouldn't be eating fish every day of the week. You should be eating mostly vegetables every day of the week. But when you do choose to eat fish, this is where you can eat it without worrying that your environmental footprint is huge. And then I suppose through the Slow Food Network, I came to the Slow Food Network, which as being European you may know of, but it's an Italian organization that kind of links artisanal small-scale food initiatives with the end consumers. So they see those as co-producers and consumers. Yeah, they're all part of the chain. Your consumption choices are just as integral a part of making things change as the producers that are growing the seed or farming the lamb or whatever. And it was through them really that, because I kind of came and going, oh, fishermen are really annoying and they're really bad, and I still think they're really annoying and I still think they're really bad, but
not all of them.
They're not all as bad as each other, maybe, although they're all rogues, you know. The very nature of what they do, a lot of them are really special people, actually, just by the very nature of what they choose to do. So through them, I understood that you can't have a clean environment, you can't have a well-cared-for environment unless the person fishing in that environment is also comfortable in their life. They have a house, they have a roof over their head, they can eat well, They're not worried about having to pay for the next bill. Anybody with anxiety or with problems in their lives, that will for sure impact on every aspect of life that they touch. So happy fishermen ultimately are good for a happy environment. So as a fishmonger here, we buy fish in a number of ways. We give the option for the fishermen to directly land to us. So they will phone up and say, we're landing tonight, what would you like, or can I land all of this? And Brexit and COVID kind of came as a perfect storm for them, where they lost their European markets and they lost their restaurant markets. So we then really came into our own. We've had so many more fishermen phoning and saying, can we please land? Because the prices on the auction were just so fluctuating. They weren't sure whether they were going to get £8 a kilo or £15 a kilo. It was that variable. So that was great, and that helped us really build the trust. So even when the prices were low on the market, they were still like, you're still going to pay what you said you were going to pay last month? It's like, yep, we're still going to pay that. And that really helped build the trust. And now it's turned the other way around, in that the restaurants have reopened, lockdown is kind of lifting. Prices are just sky high at the moment. Nobody knows why, but food inflation is something that everyone is talking about almost globally, I think. It's happening in America for sure. And still, they are saying, would you like us to land to you? Even though we're pretty sure we could still get at least what you're paying, or if not even better on the market at the moment. So for me, that's a real testimony of the strength of the model that we've brought to them, and the community that we've managed to grow. So that's really nice, because that's taken a long time to get to that point.
So when you buy the fish, it's always sort of like the same price. There's no fluctuation like you would have at the auctions in the big fish market. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. So the small scale fishermen will always benefit from the better prices on the market. So they would never land to us if they knew they were only going to get a bad price. So we always have to fix our price at the sort of top end of the range. And up until now, when a big beam trawler has landed and there's been a lot of surplus on the market, the prices obviously fall. So even if you're line catching or your static gill netting, which are much lower impact environmentally for the marine bed methods of fishing, you're not rewarded for that low impact method of fishing. So Soul of Discretion was really trying to reward fishers for low impact fishing through paying them better.
And so do you only buy fish from fishermen that use good techniques, like no trawlers, but just like line caught?
So that is where I started. So obviously line caught has the least impact. But then, of course, you've got to think about the number of species you can catch with a line. And if everybody only caught line caught, then, of course, the focus would soon deplete those fewer species. And then, of course, they use bait as well. And nobody ever considers the bait that goes into it. And it's probably such a small amount that it's not really that significant. But nonetheless, they use bait.
And do you know where the bait is coming from?
Wherever the cheapest source of fish can come. So almost certainly beam trawlers.
Yeah.
So there is that consideration. I don't think it's a massive one, but it's not as perhaps completely clean as slightly less educated people, the marine biology students at Plymouth would know. And then the static netters, so that's like a big tennis net stuck out in a sea. And of course, the good thing about that is not impacting on the seabed much. Again, it very much depends on the style of the fisherman. So even the same boat with the same gear can have a very different impact on the size of the fish that they get, or even where they're catching, so with the discards and that kind of thing. So some people could have a mesh size that's still big, 120 mil, but they might rig it so it's very limp in the water, which of course catches many more smaller individuals. And it might catch a different range of species as well. So the bycatch in there and the size of the fish tend to be a lot smaller. Whereas if it's 120 mil, so same size mesh, but taut, the big one. So have you heard of boffs? Big, old, fat, fecund females? The ones that produce a lot of eggs.
Yes, so you don't want to catch
them. You almost don't want to catch the really big ones. So everybody assumes that the big ones are the best to catch, but actually the ones in the middle, so not the real tiddlers and not the really big ones, but that kind of age group from maybe 3 to 8, depending on what
species
it is, they might be our actual target species. So the gill nets in some ways can be absolutely brilliant at catching that target class size. whereas the handliners will be catching big, small, everything. So in many ways, a good gill netter could actually be even better than a handliner if done well. And then there was the whole impact of the trawl. And for a very long time, I was really keen not to get from the trawls. But I've worked with a lot of trawlers now, and they've showed me the gears that they use. And they have these really small treaders that are like the size of a sort of big fluffy tennis ball. So they're really not impacting much on the bottom. They've not got diggers that go into the bottom of the seabed to tease out the fish. They can do very short hauls. They can go over similar ground, so they can go over the same area, so they're not disturbing new habitat. I think you have to know the boats that you're working with the trawls much better than you would with a gill netter or a handliner, because they have the potential for doing more damage. But again, if you didn't use the trawlers, you'd be losing an awful lot of the species. So most of the flatfish, for example, or most of the pelagic fish would be caught by a midwater trawl, like a herring or an anchovy.
But isn't bycatch higher in trawlers than in gill nets? Or
again, it depends. So much depends on the fisherman. It really does. And that's where it gets so difficult when you're looking at some of them. So if they have a nice square mesh panel at the end of their rig, then a lot of the smaller fish can get out, and the discarded species that they're not targeting can get out. But to be honest, very few small boats discard anything, because they might be targeting turbot and get ray, but they'll still land the ray. So long as they have the quota for it, they'll still land it. Very few of the small boats are structured in the way that it makes economic sense for them to discard. And globally, if you've seen Daniel Pawley's figures, he will show that discards from the small boats are pretty much non-existent. And certainly if they have quota for it, they will absolutely land it. There's no chance that they wouldn't.
So you only work with small-scale fishermen? Or like, what's the size of the boats that you work with?
10 metres or less.
So is that like under artisanal?
That's
fishermen?
The government's definition of small-scale. Okay. So small-scale inshore sector, by the government's definition, is under 10 metres.
Why do you choose to work with small-scale fishermen?
For all those reasons, essentially they are the lower impact. I should ask this question of my scientist friends. I don't know of one fishery that's been decimated by the small-scale fishers. I don't know of one. So maybe that's a question you could ask of your professors. And I will ask it too now. It's only just come to me. But there are hundreds that the larger industrial boats have decimated. So the bass is another example. The line caught bass in the southwest was a really sustainable fishery. And as soon as they got the pair trawling allowed on the offshore 12-mile limit, over a fairly short space of time, I mean a couple of years, again, the bass stocks absolutely plummeted.
And so do you work primarily in the southwest?
So most of it comes in the southwest. We're just starting to work with fishers down in the Eastbourne southeast coast as well. So they've just come on stream to be able to club together and do what we're doing here, really process and land fish from exclusively under 10 metre boats. So I'm working with the Soil Association on a project that I hope will help the customer who is a little bit
lost.
Aware and lost is a better word.
Lost, confused.
Be able to identify through the Soil Association's organic logo standard. Of course, a wild fish can't be logged as an organic, but it can be given Soil Association's approval and differentiate small from industrial trawl caught fish.
And back to this consumer choice. So who do you sell the fish to? Is it restaurants or is it everyone?
Retail. So we focus on retail actually, to the direct to consumers, which served us well during COVID again, of course, when restaurants closed.
I bet, yeah.
But restaurants and retail require very different styles of processing. So when we finish, I'll show you what we're doing in there. But restaurants will phone up and go, oh no, I just had a booking for 60 people. Can we have 30 of that today, please? It's like, no. whereas retailers, once you've set the lines up, we just email them once a week. They'll buy for their shops. It's a much different way of working. It takes a lot more effort to come to that point where you can sell. But once you've got that point, it becomes much easier. And also, my whole thing was, in restaurants, a really conscientious chef does now have the ability to go to its fishmonger and say, well, how and where was this fish caught?
And what do you have today?
And what do you have today? Whereas you as a consumer can't go to a shop and you don't have that luxury. So that's the market I absolutely wanted to fill. Because I was frustrated myself from all my fishy friends going, Caroline, you're a fishy person. Where do you buy your fish from? And I go, I don't.
Exactly. You know? I get that MSC. Question really often. Like, yeah. Where can you actually get fish in Plymouth that is, locally caught, sustainably? Because, people tend to go to supermarkets or Sainsbury's and Tesco, and even there you sort of like confused by all the different logos and labels, and consumers don't really know what a good fishing method is. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know what beam trawl is. They don't mm-hmm. know exactly what's the difference. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really confusing. If anyone in Plymouth is listening now, where can they get fish?
Well, they're welcome to come here for a start.
Where are we?
Yeah, we are. Good points. We're virtual. We are behind the aquarium, I think is the easiest thing to say to people that don't know the Fish Quay so well. So it is actually open to the public, the Fish Quay down here, but you'd never think that was the case. It feels very alien, I think.
It doesn't feel really consumer friendly.
It doesn't, no. They're working on that.
That's cool.
But the best place, to think about where you're heading is the aquarium, and then the entrance to the Fish Quay is on the little roundabout between the Lockers Quay pub and the aquarium. So you can buy from most places down here, actually, or you can go onto our website and you can buy online. And if you pick coming to collect, you don't have to pay the delivery charge if you're just picking up one pack. We don't actually sell locally to any shops here, which is a bit strange. We sell to a couple of restaurants in the South Hams area. So most of our fish goes to Bristol and London and beyond.
But then, people can still come.
You can still come and buy, or you can buy online and it can get delivered if you can't be bothered to come collect it yourself.
Because, I think it's really confusing. Even like me, if I've got friends asking, what sort of species can I get at that time of year? And it's really hard to find this information, I think. Mm-hmm. I know there's a seafood guide from Cornwall.
Seafood Guide is pretty good, I think. And they're really good because they'll say, so fishmongers will say, oh, what's in season? And they'll tell you what's easy to catch. And often that means it's coming in to spawn, which is absolutely the time when a marine biologist wouldn't want to be putting pressure on that spawning stock. So the Cornish Seafood Guide is actually a really good one because it says, this is when they're spawning, avoid catching it then. So that's much better than actually asking most fishmongers.
I guess there's also the Marine Conservation Society, the MCS Seafood Guide. I know they've got a list.
Yeah.
But what do you think of this sort of list that put, categories in red and orange?
Well, that's
and
who
green.
I just come off the call with when you were coming in. So, for example, Able and Cole are a big online organic delivery company, and they follow very strictly MCS's green to red ratings. And MCS are relying on every stock data information that everyone else does. So the same as the MSC, the Marine Stewardship Council, which is the FAO's United Nations fisheries scientists information. And the small scale inshore guys will say, well, ray might be in a real problem around this area, in the Northeast Atlantic, but in our particular areas, it's teeming with ray. But because it's either data insufficient and ray is fairly uncommercial, so scientists aren't paid to look into assessing its stock very regularly, or it's rated badly because in the Bay of Biscay it's really overfished, but it comes around under the same banner, then it automatically gets rated red here. And this is a real problem for our fishers, because I'm telling Able and Cole, we can get you cuttlefish, we can get you ray, we can get you herring, they're all brilliantly caught, they're really low impact means of fisheries, they're plentiful in these areas, and yet the MCS rates them badly. So it was me, the fisher, MCS and Able and Cole on this call today to try and get to the bottom of that perennial difficulty.
It's really context dependent and depending on where
it really
you are.
Is.
Because stocks are like, it's not one big stock. It's different.
The Bay
places.
Of Biscay guys probably aren't coming all the way up the English Channel.
I did.
Mean, some of them do, but a lot of them don't.
Exactly. I did a seafood guide for home, actually, which is the southwest of the Bay of Biscay. And even within the Bay of Biscay, you've got the southwest and you've got Brittany. And they're different. And, fishermen work differently in different parts of the region. And it's really important to consider that, definitely. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, you were saying I would not tell, people to stop eating fish. And I mean, recently, I don't know if you've watched it, the Seaspiracy documentary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the main thing, although what the first thing they say is cut harmful subsidies. I think that was a good one.
That's but a then, good thing. Not, most but, of it's great.
But then what people got from it is stop eating fish. Although they talk about subsidies, but it's easier for someone to stop eating fish than asking the government to stop using taxes to subsidize
bad fishing.
Bad fishing. But yeah, what are your thoughts about, you know, eating fish, and do we rely on it in the UK that much? Should we rely more on it?
Well, Seaspiracy was, if it's targeted for Europeans, wealthy Europeans, that's one message. But certainly, if I was talking to my friends in Uganda or Mauritania through the slow fish connection, where their Lake Victoria or their Mauritanian seacoast is their only source of good food, then that's an insult. You know, turn vegan, guys. You know, that's a real white man trying to save the world's developed problems. So that aside, because I actually don't think, to be fair to him, that's what he would have said. He was targeting European wealthy.
Yeah, Western countries cultures. That eat way above average. Like the
we can afford to eat less. You know, yeah. We really should be eating less. But if he's saying, rather than eat a locally landed, low impact, carbon neutral to, you know, carbon, low carbon fossil fuel input fish, to a genetically modified palm oil or soya bean burger at KFC, I just think that's such a ludicrous conclusion. I mean, for the planet, that is so damaging on every level. So the fact that you've got genetically modified soya in most vegan products is, one, you're playing to the hands of the new colonialists, right? You know?
Yeah, it's Monsanto shifting the problem, like, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's like...
And they get more power, they get more control over the food system, whereas we want individuals around the globe to be in charge of their own food sovereignty. You know, they are the ones that are feeding us, not Bayer and Monsanto sitting at distant networks. So for me, anything that contains genetically modified or even non-genetically modified soya or palm oil is not doing better for the planet than eating a locally landed fish. And again, you know, if I talk to my friends in Scotland, it's much harder for them to eat a very vegetable-based diet unless they're living on entirely beetroot and tatties and neeps for most of the year, which is also good, but they should be supplementing their diet with a little bit of locally landed fish to be good for the planet.
And that makes me think, obviously, Scotland is one of the biggest countries for aquaculture and salmon. Do you work with aquaculture farms, or what are your thoughts on aquaculture? And can it be sustainable? And I know it's a big question and nothing is black or white, but what are your thoughts with sort of this question?
So we didn't touch farm salmon for a long time, and then one of our customers, Farm Drop, said, well, you know, we know you don't like it, but we really need it. Would you process it for us? So from 1 week to the next, we started processing Loch Duart salmon. And from my Japanese restaurant before, I'd been using Loch Duart salmon since the late 90s, early 2000s. And from 1 week to the next, salmon sales went to a third of everything that we sold. It was so depressing. It's like we've got 50 species on our list, and yet 30% of them are going to this one farm salmon. Mm. And I think for so long people, and this is why Seaspiracy was so good in many ways, people believe that eating farm was somehow helping the planet rather than exasperating it. But of course it's not. And I'm just trying at the moment to buy cuttlefish from this potter in Cornwall. He said, oh no, we've stopped doing the cuttle this year because we can get more potting for wrasse, ballan wrasse, that will go into the cages for the salmon farm to eat their lice. Oh. So he stopped fishing for
human consumption
just to fish for wrasse that 50% die before they even get to the farms. And then they're put in these tanks and they don't last more than a season. And these poor things get put into foreign waters. You know, it's not nice for them, right?
Yeah.
And they get a fed salmon lice. So for me, the whole... If you look at from the feed that comes from so far away, so it's always going to have soya products in it for the most part, vegetable oil content from further afield. It'll have some fish meal content in it as well, which could come from the world's worst industrial fishing environments. So all this effort, and even in the hatchery, the amount of lighting and electricity and heat that had to go into the hatchery, it's like, why not eat the herring and the sardinella and the anchovy that go into that farm salmon? They taste better. They're better for the environment. They're better for the locals that
they've
catch them.
They've got less heavy metals.
They've got less heavy metals, less PCBs. Yeah. You know, why eat this disgusting salmon that comes out of it?
Again, like what you were saying, how like a third of your sales were going to salmon. It's like five species that we eat, like salmon, tuna, cod.
Haddock and prawns.
Haddock and prawns. And then is how do you create this market for other species that consumers don't find attractive? How do you make them actually like it? Or how do you make them to try to cook it? Or
so that's another thing, isn't it? We're a nation of non-cookers in the UK. But I mean, I'm not brilliant at cooking because I have a French husband, so I don't need to. But even I recognised that fish is so simple to make an incredibly quick, nutritious dinner. So the way we pack it, and I'll show you in a minute, but we're basically packing for a dinner for two. So it's packed dinner for two. So if there's four of you, buy two packs. If there's one of you, just splurge out or put one in the fridge for later. And you basically get them, rinse them gently, pat them dry, salt and pepper on the skin, bit of oil on the top, put them under the grill for 5 to 8 minutes, and you've got the most delicious supper. That's all you've had to do. Mm. You don't have to do anything more. That's it.
No, I agree.
But it takes 10 minutes.
Was there that story of the spider crabs that is being renamed
the Cornish king crab
to make people more likely to buy it?
Yeah, and like Megrim, Torbay sole. It worked with the sardines because they used to be pilchards and now they're Cornish sardines. Oh. And my goodness, since they were rebranded pilchards, which before your time I used to as a kid eating tomato sauce in a tin, and that was the down market idea people had of sardines. And as soon as they were rebranded into Cornish sardines, they're on every posh menu's restaurant.
That's crazy.
Menu, yeah.
If we need that to make people buying it, then I don't see the problem.
I don't see the problem. And the chefs are behind it. I mean, the chefs have done really great things. Hugh Fernie Whittingstall's just amazing. Jamie Oliver's amazing.
To make people...
Rick Stein. They've just done brilliant things for fish.
For someone to buy fish from you, is that more expensive than buying fish from a supermarket?
Having not been into a supermarket for about 15 years, and I know I should know my market, but that's not the one I'm targeting. I actually don't know the honest answer to that. I'd like to think not. I can give you a price list and you can go online. I think if you went for things like cod, which we hardly sell anyways because there's so little quota down here that the small guys don't get it, but you're not comparing like to like, because if we did get it, we'd be buying it from a line caught fisherman with a very small quota, and nearly all cod from Britain comes from Iceland or the huge, great pelagic boats up in Scotland. Whereas if you're comparing it, and this is the thing, it's very hard to compare because most of the supermarkets don't sell locally landed species. You don't get locally landed, I don't know, pouting or whiting or a ling. They just don't appear in supermarkets. So I don't think they would be considered more expensive than others. But then again, I don't think food should be cheap. So whilst I don't want people that don't have good income to be able to afford healthy food, and that's another massive issue, if they took the subsidies out of palm oil and they took the subsidies out of oil full stop, and the playing fields were levelled for the likes of Unilever and Nestle and all these big brands that create these incredible unhealthy foods, there would be a more of a level playing field, and poorer income families would be able to think, well, okay, that's no more or less expensive and whatever. But we are paying a fair price to the fishermen. I'm paying fair wages here for processing.
And I think you got a good point, is fish, or like food in general, shouldn't be cheap. And I mean, maybe it is more expensive than, you know, fish that has been trawled in the mid-Pacific and is now in Sainsbury's. Then what do you pay for? You know, you maybe actually give good money to fishermen and it's supporting livelihoods. And it's not just about your money, but also like, who you impact by buying this fish. It has like a social dimension to it.
It absolutely does, yeah. And I'd like to think, but you need to be the judge of this, but if you ate it and you taste fresh fish, that actually it's a bit like having a pizza. You know, you could get a frozen pizza and put it in the oven, and that's nice. It feeds the family for a quick dinner. But if you went to a proper Italian pizza place, that pizza is on a different level.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to go back to the
With vegetables. I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford getting my vegetables from Riverford, which is like an organic farm from Devon.
Just down here.
And you can see the difference between like carrots that have been grown in Devon by Riverford organically and carrots that you buy in plastic bags in Lidl.
Yeah.
You can see the difference, taste the difference. And I'm pretty sure it's the same with fish. And when I'm buying vegetables, organic, yes, it is more expensive, but the impact it has on everything for the soil, for the community, for the planet, for the people, I think all these different factors that you need to consider. And yes, it might be more expensive, but it's a good investment, I think.
And I bet because it is more expensive, you don't waste anything. You don't see a carrot at the bottom of your fridge and go, bin it.
No. Exactly. It's fresh. It doesn't go off.
It doesn't go off either. That's true. But you're more conscious. It makes you aware of what you need to be looking out for.
Yeah.
And not just binge shopping because you were hungry when you went into the supermarket.
And so do you find people more and more interested in consuming fish more sustainably?
We definitely did during lockdown, and we definitely did post-Seaspiracy. So Seaspiracy was great for us like that. But I think, to be fair to Seaspiracy, in the absence of being able to say, buy this, don't buy that, you know, what would they have said? Buy what? You know, it's very hard with a fishing to get full traceability back to the boat and the method of catch and where it was caught.
Super difficult.
The supermarkets don't want that to happen because, of course, it completely incriminates them. Oh, yes, your cod did come from Iceland, or oh, yes, your hake did come from South Africa, even though we catch it off the Cornish coast here. So they don't want you to know that.
There's been this really good paper by Bloom where they wrote that paper and they showed how 80% of the fisheries that are certified MSC are actually industrial. Like they use photos of small fishing boats, but actually like most of the fisheries that are certified MSC are not sustainable at all.
Depends on your view definition of sustainability, absolutely. But yeah, it was set up for Unilever to be able to supply into its fish fingers and all that sort of thing. And I don't actually believe that there are many foods that lend themselves easily to commoditized global food systems. Now, that's what oil does. That's not what seed or sheep. It shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be cheaper to get farm salmon from Chile in Britain than locally landed ling or whiting. It's just crazy.
The world
is mad.
Yeah, well, hopefully, self-discretion is...
Well, you're part of it, you know. We can't survive without interested customers. That's the whole thing. And the younger generation do give me hope. You really do, guys. You really do.
Really glad to learn about this. And, I don't know, knowing the different initiatives that are happening in Plymouth, leading the way on that. And I hope more and more people... And I know I've got so many friends at uni that have been asking, you know, where can I get fish and what fish should I get? And now I know where to send them.
Oh, thank you. That's very sweet of you. But yeah, I'd like to think that there is still, because we trace back, I'll get you a pack, but we trace back on every fish pack to the boat. So you know exactly how it was caught, what method of catch and what boat. And as far as I know, we're still the only retailer to do that.
In Plymouth or even in
I think in the UK. I don't know of another that's actually doing that. Eastbourne will soon, but they're not yet.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time and all
Thank you for being interested.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Caroline from Self-Discretion. And I'm really happy to have finally made an episode about fishing in Plymouth. And actually, our conversation was way longer than 30 minutes and I had to like cut stuff, and we talked about loads that were not on recording, and it was really, really inspiring. I've learned a lot doing this episode, and whether you are a vegan or vegetarian or whether you eat meats or fish, I really hope this episode has allowed you to think a bit more about why you do it and how you do it, and hopefully taught you a bit about the fishing industry and what's the role of consumers within it, and how our choice dictates the way the industry can shift. So thanks for being part of this journey with me. And if you have any more questions or comments, you just want to chat about it, like I'm really happy to do so. Feel free to contact me, or if you want, you can contact Caroline and sort of this question. I've put all the details in the description for you to check out. And yeah, I'll speak to you soon for the next episode.